You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio, produced by Pete Zimmerman. This is John Williams. Thanks for joining in. We're here all the way until 1 o'clock, and then Anna DeVlantis comes your way. Chicago's Afternoon News is how we'll make your Friday happen here on the radio station. After that, let's get started now. Here's Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network at thelasallenetwork.com. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Always good to be with you, John Williams.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. You know, everybody on the radio this week has been talking about that short selling business. Give me your best 30 seconds on that, and then I'll move on.
Well, number one, there's always more to it than the layman knows. Number two, I'm in the camp that feels that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And for some of the people that have made hundreds of millions of dollars or more, to take a hit, isn't necessarily a bad thing. And lastly, I think we found something out that really is undeniable, and that is that short sellers can actually sell more stock than actually exists by 50%, and that's crazy. And so I think there's always going to be loopholes, and sometimes it takes the people to find it, and you evolve and you grow, and that's the beauty of capitalism, and I think good things will come of it.
I've heard people say that short selling isn't inherently unethical or bad. But I was scratching my head this week trying to see what value do they provide to America, especially if they're selling something they don't own, 50% of which might not even exist. I mean, what good do they do?
Well, we could probably play that on a lot of levels with a lot of industries is what good does something do. You know, we have a comparison, Mark, based on how poorly things went in 2008 with the housing crisis and what people were doing with selling those bad mortgages, that there are people who will do bad things which are very different than doing something that doesn't add value. There's a difference between something that's detrimental and something that's neutral. There's a difference between Switzerland and Iran. And we have to look at this situation and say, what is okay for people to find loopholes to make money and what is really detrimental to society? And being able to get to sell 50% of something you never own, that's a bad thing. And now it's being exposed. And now why it existed for so long, that's anybody's guess. And sometimes there is a club of people that do things that aren't always in our best interest. But that's part of the evolution of a free market.
It's kind of interesting now we got religion and they're saying, okay, well, now you shouldn't be able to do that. They were happy when they were doing it. They don't want Reddit users to be able to do it. Let's talk a little bit about fewer Americans should get a $1,600, make it $1,400 stimulus check, or should we get a $1,400 stimulus check? Has your mind changed or moved around at all on that, Tom?
John, you know where I stand. Unemployed people who've been hurt by this should get the stimulus check. That is one area that it should be going to. People who are currently employed, why don't we should have given it to them 5 years ago. We should give it to them 5 years from now. What is the point of that? The goal here is that we live in a country that you can go from being in the mailroom to being in the C-suite eventually if you're smart enough and you work hard enough. That still exists. But if people have been hurt due to this COVID crisis and you're in the restaurant business or the hotel business or the airline business, you need a helping hand. You need the $1,400. And maybe you need more than that. But if you're employed, you don't.
What about this? Remote work is making some people paranoid. I saw a statistic that something like 20 to 30% of the people that are working from home won't be going back. That the number of, that is, they'll still be working, but the amount of people that are actually going to go back into the offices, it may never be at the number it used to be. Are you seeing that as well?
I believe, and I talk to CEOs and CFOs and heads of HR every day, and what it's telling me, what they are telling me, is this thing's got to shake out over the next 12 to 18 months. And not just COVID being cured and or the vaccine being effective, but how their business evolves and truly what happens to the workforce. We don't know. There were more executive actions signed last week than any president in their first year, in their first week, right? So there's a lot of things that are going to happen, whether it's increased taxes, the stimulus plan, what happens with the stock market as a result, and then COVID. And we don't know. What if the stock market drops to 20,000 and unemployment goes back up into the teens? What companies will lay people off, and then no one will care about where they work. They'll just want a job. And so what leaders are telling me is things are going to stay kind of status quo, remote work, and some people coming into the office for the next 6 to 12 months. And during that time, we'll see where society sets up. No one wants to guarantee anything anymore because the future is unpredictable.
But is there anything golden about being in the office and all being together? Or is it possible that, like a lot of things, we'll discover we should have or could have been doing it differently all along?
We're going to find out that there are aspects that could have been done remotely, number one, for talent reasons. Meaning you might find somebody who can help your company or add skills who doesn't live near you. So that is something that will happen. Number two, you find out that there's a certain population of your company that actually can be more productive, not in the office. However, onboarding new staff remotely is a huge challenge. Getting them to feel comfortable, getting them to know who the people are, getting them to actually to have a corporate culture. And what you're going to see is as the economy recovers long term, whether it's now or in 2 or 3 years from now, is if you don't have people working together, there's going to be less loyalty, less dedication, less inclusion. And everybody's going to feel like remote islands, and they're not going to care, you know, whether they are a driver for Uber or a driver for Lyft, as long as I have a job. And you don't want that in your company.
One last thing then. What tips do you have for people who are new to a job, but it's been a virtual job for you? That is, you've been working from home or maybe remotely in an office.
So don't hide, meaning always have your camera on during Zoom calls with your clients, with your coworkers, with staff. If there is an option for it to be a Zoom call, have your camera on. If you're using Teams or Slack, use the video function, not just the phone, and show your face to people. Summarize every meeting you have with your boss or somebody above you with a summary of what the call was and what the takeaways are, and make sure you over-communicate your progress as to what you're doing. If you don't show accountability for what they're doing, out of sight will be out of mind, and you'll be left in the dust if they ever have to do a reduction in force again.
I think that sounds pretty smart. Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network. Visit thelasallenetwork.com. Tom, always fun. Nice to talk to you today.
Stay healthy, John Williams, and talk to you soon.
I hope so. Yeah, and that's the plan. Same to you. Joe Scioli joins us now. He is the deputy editor overseeing markets and investing for Business Insider. The website is businessinsider.com. Thanks for joining us today. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I'm fine, but I'm looking at the markets. Look at that. The Dow's off 730 plus. The NASDAQ is off 346, at least it was 60 seconds ago. The S&P is off 92. What's happening here today?
You know, that's funny because GameStop is up about 100%. So there you go. There's our dynamic in play right there. But what's going on is I think we're seeing a lot of hedge funds that got in on this retail trading frenzy and bid these stocks up, taking some profits, closing out some positions. You know, it wasn't just GameStop that saw all this activity this week. It was a lot of these other heavily shorted companies like AMC Entertainment and COS. And so I think what you're seeing is, you know, a lot of the hedge funds that piled into the momentum trader are now getting the heck out before they're caught holding the bag.
But they're closing out other issues to get the money to cover what they're losing on these short sells, right?
Yeah, that's true. It might not be the same hedge funds that are short that are now long. A lot of places tend to do one or the other. So it actually could be some sort of, intra hedge fund battle between the shorts and those that make long bets.
I was wondering yesterday, and I don't know if anybody can know the answer, although mostly what I've heard is don't worry. But is there a possibility that this is a first set of dominoes, and it's not just going to be, aha, the big guys had to take it in the shorts, no pun intended, but that other things are going to happen, and other things are going to happen, and eventually my mutual funds or my 401ks are suddenly going down precipitously? Or is this just a one-off? This is a separate event, and those things aren't all connected?
So I think what's actually happening with GameStop specifically and these stocks, that these kind of nostalgia Reddit stocks, is it's definitely interesting and troubling, but it's not necessarily the bubble that's going to end up bursting. But I think that the underlying mechanics kind of informing this decision-making is where the issue lies, and that's in just kind of this extreme speculation we're seeing across the market. You know, we've seen for months stocks at record highs, even with the economy, you know, in recession. We've seen tech stocks blow past every single possible valuation metric that would suggest it's time to get out without issue. So, yes, this is just a symptom of kind of the rampant speculation going on in markets right now. And if you listen to, you know, a lot of these smart hedge fund managers, kind of industry leaders, they'll tell you a big problem is the Fed keeping interest rates so low for so long and kind of making it so there's no comeuppance. If you continue to pile into a really crowded trade, it'll just continue rising as long as interest rates are low.
Maybe I shouldn't ask this, but what's the next GameStop? What's the next AMC or BlackBerry? Have you got one for me?
Oof, that's a tough one. What we saw with GameStop was kind of just like a perfect storm of things. We had the founder of Chewy, this VC named Ryan Cohen, made an investment, and then there was a short seller that came out with the report, and then that was just sort of like that got everyone to galvanize and decide they were going to squeeze those shorts out. You know, we've seen a couple of GameStops in the last couple of days since then. We've seen AMC Entertainment, Tanger Outlets. There's all these kind of heavily shorted companies that are doing that. But, you know, what is going to be the next target of the Reddit crowd? It's really impossible to know because one of the added things here is sort of this underlying nihilism that kind of informs what they're doing. Like they're kind of half market disruptors, half trolls. So you're getting a situation where they're purposely picking like nostalgic stocks and ones that are kind of unpopular and, you know, out of style. And making those part of their decision, you know, oh, it would be funny to make a stock of a brick and mortar video game retailer soar. That's not 100% the impetus. I mean, there's a lot of money behind this. It has to be more than just a troll job, but there's definitely sort of this weird fascination with kind of unstylish brands. So if Blockbuster Video was publicly traded,
yeah,
they would probably be looking at that next.
I was just thinking, which would be stupid, right? But I guess you can do anything you want. In fact, isn't there something self-fulfilling about this? It's not what will be. It's what do you want it to be? If Reddit decided that it was some other, as you say, nostalgia company, they could drive that, assuming that somebody had shorted it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the key is the shorts, because when that happens, you're squeezing people out of positions. And it's kind of creating this chain reaction of buying that helps push your position even higher. And then all the people that have FOMO on your Reddit forum get in. And then, you know, really it's dangerous. But, you know, for people that get out at the right time, it can be potentially very profitable. In that sense, it's sort of like gambling. So, you know, there are definitely some Reddit day traders that are going to make a killing on this. A lot of them are going to be caught holding the bag. So, like you mentioned, you know, this probably isn't the last time we're going to see this. We could see it crop up sometime soon in another heavily shorted stock for sure.
I like the way you described the nihilism of it and the trolling of it. That is, what's really driving this is not an interest in the company or even the viability, but really just taking it to the man. And I wonder what kind of an investment strategy that is, really.
No, I'm really glad you brought that up because that's definitely part of it too. And that's not a media narrative. They are on the Reddit and they are saying in as many words, probably some more colorful words we can't say on the radio, let's stick it to the man. So that's definitely a thing. They had actually targeted Melvin Capital, which was the hedge fund that was really short GameStop that ended up imploding and needing a bailout. They had targeted that. There had been chatter about squeezing that hedge fund even before this GameStop stuff came to the forefront in the last couple of weeks. So, yes, there's definitely sort of this populist uprising, I'd say, amongst these people. They, the founder of Wall Street Bets himself, he mans the Wall Street Bets Twitter. He said maybe Occupy Wall Street had the wrong idea. He actually said that on Twitter. So clearly, you know, the person that's even running this forum has, I guess, a societal upheaval in mind, and they're definitely trying to disrupt.
Well, I can buy a stock without being part of anybody's group or platform. If you all are doing that and I want to get on board, can't I independently or through a broker buy any of these stocks and ride the wave?
Definitely, and I think that you saw that happen. You know, the people buying these stocks weren't only on Reddit. I've had friends text me and ask me, friends that have never expressed an interest in the market, should I buy Nokia? Should I buy AMC? And you know, I'm just like, you know, do what you want, but I wouldn't recommend it. And so, I mean, you're seeing people that aren't really interested in the stock market just feeling like they're missing out on something.
Oh, yeah.
And that drives them. They'll go to their E-Trade account or they'll go to their broker and they'll say, you know, load me up on some shares of of Tanger Outlets and let's do this. So, yeah, that's a vintage momentum trade. It's very speculative behavior. Some call it bubble-like conditions. Because, you know, as you know, there's no fundamentals underlying this move.
But regardless of what's driving it, if I buy GameStop at 350 and it's going to go to 400, I don't care why. I just want it to go to 400. But isn't that where we are right now? It was 17. It was 30. It was 40. Yeah. Well, now it's 400. Yeah. So you've got to feel like you've missed the boat if you're getting in now, don't you, Joe?
Yes. I think that there's a lot of people that absolutely do feel like they missed the boat. But, you know, we're seeing the stock up another 100% today at highs. And
yeah,
some people are doing the mental calculus, and they're saying, you know, I think this has further to run. I think there's more latent demand out
why
there, and
would
I'm going to take the
that?
Risk and buy
why
these levels.
Why would you think it has more room to run? The whole thing is a sham. It's a house of cards. It's not worth $400.
It's true. I mean, they're certainly not going to be they're not just going to roll out some amazing profit growth. You know, there's not going to be a fundamental factor pushing the stock up. So, yes,
well, right.
It's just a bet that that there's going to be more people like you,
yes,
that are willing to take on more risk than you.
Right, so right, right. Okay, but what about that?
It's a psychology game.
Oh, that's what it is, isn't it? Or a hate game. But, I mean, so the last thing, Joe, do you think that GameStop particularly has a little more to go?
You know, I wouldn't write anything off at this point. It certainly, I thought, because it started popping last Friday and it continued on to Monday, I thought that this would be a one, maybe two-day thing, and it's defied every expectation and essentially broken my brain. So, I mean, I can't really make a forecast. I mean, the rational person in me says, absolutely, the air is going to come out of this, but there just doesn't seem to be an end right now to the demand, and so much of that is coming from the retail investor, and somehow these retail investors can afford $400 a share, which also gets me into the territory of, you know, how much institutional money is kind of lurking here.
Oh, that's an interesting
I can't wait to find that out when they file their quarterly statements and to see which hedge funds got in on this. But
think about
that. Does it have further to run? Like, I wouldn't write anything off. Could it crash back to 17 over the next week? I also wouldn't write that off. I know that's not a great answer, but that's basically the volatility, in my opinion, is the volatility of the stock.
Well, I think it's a good answer because your brain got broken. Businessinsider.com.
Yeah, I expected to give a good answer.
No, I think everything you said is very interesting and spot on. Businessinsider.com. Joe Scioli is the deputy editor overseeing markets and investing. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Whew. 2 weeks ago, I didn't understand a word of that. Good news is that the museum campuses are open with limited capacity, but you can't get to 100% until you first go to 25. Jacob Schuler is the visitor services manager for the Field Museum. Hey, Jacob, it's John. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks so much for having us on today.
Yeah, I think you and I have spoken before. What's the capacity that you can have at the Field these days?
Yep, so we're operating at 25% capacity, which is actually quite a large amount of people, and we haven't even come close to reaching our capacity in the time that we've been open so far.
Yeah, what would, on a normal day, pre-COVID, say for a normal weekend in January, what capacity would you have? Maybe 25% is about where you'd be anyway.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, 25% is still quite significantly more than we would have on a typical weekend in January.
So 25% sounds like a compromise, but you guys could make a living at 25% in January, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's what we're trying to do.
What happens to the staff then? I know that's not your department per se, but can you talk at all about who is employed or coming back to the field?
Yep, we've got a really great group of our visitor services staff members who were working for the museum prior to COVID and are back online to help facilitate the visitor experience.
So are you all at 100% then? I mean, that's kind of what I'm wondering in terms
not
of
quite,
employment.
But,
no, not quite.
Yep.
When I go to the field, say this weekend or next week, do I need to make an online appointment or can you just show up?
Yes, you can absolutely show up. We definitely recommend making an online reservation if for no other reason than it just moves you through the admissions process a lot faster and into the exhibitions, which you're there to see. But if you're unable to reserve a ticket in advance, then we'll absolutely be able to process you on-site as well.
Do I have to wear a mask the whole time I'm in the field?
Yes, you do. Masks are required to enter the Field Museum, and it's really important that you keep those on, even when you're, you know, all the way back in the dinosaur hall and buried in those galleries. It's a really good idea just to keep the mask on at all times, and we do have masks available if for any reason you show up without one.
That's my next question. So what are the exhibits that folks are coming to see? What have you got?
Yeah, so we're really excited to continue to offer Epsilica Women and Warriors, which is our temporary ticketed exhibition through July 19th. It's a really beautiful exhibition that tells the story of the Epsilica people of the Northern Plains in the American West. And it's really gorgeous, and in addition to sort of historical artifacts and stories that you would expect to hear from an exhibition like that, it also includes really contemporary art pieces that I think help to communicate that these are very much an alive group of people that are really dynamic and contributing to the country that we live in today. So that's a really beautiful exhibition. We also are able to open up a smaller temporary exhibition, Carl Cotton, which we opened this time last year for Black History Month, and we're really excited to be able to offer again. And it tells the story of an African-American taxidermist who worked for the Field Museum back earlier in the 40s.
That's intriguing. What are the home runs or maybe the evergreens? What are the things that aren't part of a temporary exhibit but people always know they're going to enjoy when they go to the field?
Yeah, of course. People come to the field for dinosaurs and mummies, and we always have those to offer. Specifically, we have the Sioux Gallery, which we did a rehaul of back in 2018, so many people still might not have seen the update that we've made to Sue, in addition to the rest of the dinosaurs and the mummies as well. We also have halls and halls of taxidermy. We have exhibitions on the Pacific Islands, Native American, pretty much anything you could be looking for.
That's all at the Field Museum, of course. So just to recap, is it 7 days a week you're open? Have you limited the hours?
Yep, we're open 5 days a week, 9 to 5, so we are closed on Tuesdays and Wednesdays right now.
Okay, so the long weekend on either way, closed Tuesdays and Wednesdays,
right.
9 to 5. You can make your reservations online. That'll get you through the ticketing process more quickly, but if you don't, you can walk in and say, hey, I'm here. Have your mask or they'll give you one. What's it costing me to go to the Field Museum these days?
The basic admission ticket is $26, and then for the full experience with all of the exhibitions and a 3D film, you can get your ticket for $40 for the all-access pass.
We got a year-long pass, though, which really, if you go a couple of times, about pays for itself, right?
Absolutely. A Field Museum membership pays for itself with just two visits and offers so many additional perks as well.
Yeah, that's what I recommend for any of the museums on the campus there and Field among them. Okay, so let's all get on over there and continue to get outside. You can get out of your box. You can go to the field. This is good for them, and it's good for you. Good luck to you guys, Jacob. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Jacob Schuler is the Visitor Services Manager at the Field Museum. Speaking along those lines, they are going to, at some point, come back to the big exhibition halls in Chicago, the big hotel ballrooms. And, in fact, what they're doing now at the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority is plan an event to show people how it will be safe to come back. When, where, and how? We'll talk about that in just a minute. First, let's go back into the WGN Radio newsroom on the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Caterpillar's fourth quarter sales dropped 15%, with the pandemic continuing to sap construction equipment demand. Still, the company's performance topped Wall Street's estimates. Sales for the 3 months ended December 31st fell to $11.2 billion from $13.1 billion a year earlier. The Deerfield-based company earned $780 million, or $1.42 per share in the quarter. That's down from $1.1 billion, or $1.97 per share a year ago. Mondelez International says its snacks gained shares during the pandemic as people hunkered down at home with comfort food. The Chicago-based maker of Oreos and Triscuits says comparable sales rose 3.2% annually in the fourth quarter. That was in line with expectations. Mondelez says it had increased market share in its cookies and crackers businesses in the U.S. and its chocolate business in the U.K. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Let's take a couple of minutes and visit with Loretta Clark. She's the Chief Executive Officer for the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority. The largest exhibition hall in North America is McCormick Place. We are down 200 events because of the coronavirus pandemic. They've launched a digital platform that says, here's how we're going to be safe, healthy, and smart. Here's how we come back. What a good idea. Loretta, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Ah, thank you, John. It's nice to be here.
Is that a fair description? This is a digital platform illustrating best practices?
It is. Best practices now, based on the, you know, governmental requirements and CDC rules and our local health department requirements.
Is this specific to McCormick Place, or is this something anybody with a hall or a ballroom or a banquet room would utilize?
Well, this is specific to McCormick Place. We wanted to showcase for anyone that's thinking about visiting McCormick Place, and we kind of broadened it out to the entire city of Chicago, that their experience will be a healthy and safe one.
So what are you showing then? What is McCormick Place doing to make sure that it's going to be safe when people come back?
So the what you'll see on the digital platform is you can actually, we have hotspots where you can, whatever you're interested in, you can click a button and you can see, for example, we have added hand sanitizer stations throughout the facility. You'll see the sneeze guards that many folks are probably have come accustomed to at restaurants. We've also been accredited by the Global Biorisk Advisory Council, which is the gold standard for health and safety in buildings and facilities. And we received that GBAC star back in August. So I wanted the listeners to know that we've been thinking about them and making sure that we're up to date on all the health requirements from the time this pandemic began.
Yeah, that just to be clear, that GBAC star rating is GBAC, and that's Global Biorisk Advisory
Council.
I never knew there was such a thing, but I guess it's good there is, right?
Yes, there is. And it's been adopted by many facilities now since then.
Huh. So that's really the sort of good housekeeping seal of approval that you want to look for when you go about, huh?
Yes. And then planners and attendees can feel confident that by choosing a facility that's got that accreditation, that they're going to have a clean and safe facility.
GBAC, G-B-A-C star. You know, everybody, of course, the coronavirus is carried through the air, through little particles. McCormick Place is so vast, though. I wonder if you have the same need to put in air purifiers, since it almost feels like you're outdoors when you're in some of those halls.
Well, actually, we do have these huge air filters, and we've upgraded to hospital-grade air filters. We still want to assure our guests and our delegate attendees that we are going to, they can meet responsibly. So we do believe that we did need to upgrade those filters, and we also increased the outside air circulation coming through our halls so that, you know, those particles that you're referring to can flow through and out as quickly as possible.
Loretta Clark's on the phone line, Chief Executive Officer for the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority. This is the McCormick Place people. What's the next or the first show that's going to come back? Have you been doing any bookings?
Well, I can't tell you what's coming back because we're definitely going to wait for the health professionals to tell us when events can return. But our schedule, we're tentatively scheduled to have the National Restaurant Association show in May of this year.
That is on the, I'm a little surprised to hear that. That is, if you got the green light, you would be prepared and ready to host that.
Yes, if we got the green light, we would ramp up quickly and we'd be ready.
And then the other, I guess, side of the equation is, and would they be willing to come? I wonder what attendance would be.
And that part we're not sure about. So under typical circumstances, attendance is 65,000. Of course, we wouldn't expect that at this point, but that's, we don't know. It really is going to depend, I think, on where we are with vaccines and all of that. So But any, we would be happy to open our doors and just get the ball rolling when the time is right.
But that's 3 months away. Is that mm-hmm. how realistic? What are the chances that the restaurant show will be here?
I'm not sure. We also have events, a little over 30 events booked. Let's say restaurant can't attend or can't be here this year. We have about 35 events booked beginning in July through the end of the calendar year. So if they can't attend, we'll work that out, but we're still hoping that this year we can host an event.
I must tell you, I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear that there's 35 other events. I mean,
yes.
You know, we all talk about the light at the end of the tunnel. That's some light at the end of the tunnel, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
What do you think? And are we? But I presume those other events aren't 65,000 events. They might be 600 people. What? Talk about the scale that you're looking at.
Well, typically our events are no less than 10,000. Right. So we're 2.6 million square feet of exhibit space. We have four halls that are probably larger than some convention centers individually.
Yeah.
But we will be willing to host small events also. So we, you know, our doors, we've got room for corporate events or even the large scale events, and we can make sure that they're socially distanced, right? Because we have quite a bit of space.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, when you go to the auto show or the consumer electronics shows, these things typically are kind of shoulder to shoulder if you're doing it right. Going forward, are you going to have to limit the number of people that can come in? How do you distance people at a convention?
So we would work with the event organizer. What McCormick Place does basically is we take our space and we sell our space or rent our space to event organizers like the Automobile Association, and then they would, you know, bring in exhibitors or auto manufacturers like Toyota and some of the others, and they figure out how much space they need. So as we ramp back up to being allowed to have more people, we will probably just have, you know, wider aisles where folks can, you know, sort of like the grocery store where folks can pass each other without getting too close. And then we will work with the event organizer to make sure that their operating plan is approved or pre-approved by our health professionals.
Hmm. I got to go, Loretta. When's the drop-dead date for the restaurant show? I shouldn't put it that way, but when's the deadline to know if the restaurant show happens?
I honestly don't have that information in front of me, but I'm sure it would be approaching pretty quickly.
Yeah. In the meantime, if I wanted to click through, how do I do this? How do I access this platform that you've created?
Wait a minute. HealthyMeetingChicago.com.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So,
or MPEA.com or HealthyMeetingChicago.com. There's an S there. HealthyMeetingsChicago.
HealthyMeetingsChicago.com, correct.
Loretta Clark is the Chief Executive Officer over at the Metropolitan Peer and Exposition Authority. All right, Loretta, let's stay in touch. Good luck to you all.
Thank you so much.